right, this is Pure Decking, show number 505 for Thursday, January the 26th, 1788. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and good God, I've been having a hell of a day with my 3D printers. What's up, are you?
Not much, man. I just realized I was doing this map search all wrong. I have access to school supplies. Why am I fucking going to buy stuff?
There you go.
There just occurred to me. I could just go raid a supply cupboard where no one's looking.
Oh, and get all the pull down maps that nobody probably even uses anymore.
Nobody uses anymore. Yep. I'll just go to the fucking surplus place, like where they keep all their old shit. They don't mind you helping yourself to that if it's going to a good home.
Tell them you're starting a video channel and need backdrops.
Well, I'm getting a new hobby.
You inspired me with.
I'm one of the founding members of the Junior Cartography Club. But apart from that, no, I'm going to start following conflicts around the world with little pins, just for fun.
So about a year from now, you're going to have the pins and the yarn, and it's going to look like conspiracy theory in there.
Yes!
Covered in the post-it notes of oil pipeline, you know. I can't think of her name now. Hell.
It's been killing me, man, what to do with my office walls.
Oh, yeah?
There's blank. I'm like, well, my previous office had my paintings and everything, things like that. I'm like, nah, that's old. I want to redo it, but I want to do it something where it's people walk in, they go, wow, that's a fucking weird room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I want to do like this serial killer thing, but follow conflicts around the world. Just really weird ones. Like some of the African conflicts.
Victoria
things
Newman,
like that.
That's what it was. That's the name of the person I was trying to think of.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, like different color pins for where she's been versus where the wars are happening.
Actually, that's part of it, dude. Like, who visits where and when what breaks out, things like that.
Be a hell of a... Years from now, we're going to see the video with nobody on it but a stick coming up from the bottom, here to here, just explaining everything.
No, years from now, it'll be man crushed by map pins stuck in, 14 tons peels off wall, crushes man to death.
No, it's going to be your wife tells you to take a map down to move it, and when you do, the whole wall's going to come down with it because you've had so many pins in it.
That's a structural map now. I thought I'd do something like that.
Well, that'd be cool,
better than
though.
Just buying a piece of art and sticking it up. And then I was like, I could buy some old like art and add stuff to it, you know. But I'm like, it's cliched. Everyone's done shit like that.
Well,
I'm going to go with the serial killer look.
So what I'm hoping to do to get some stuff up on the walls of my house is I picked up one of those diode lasers a while back, and I've never really set it up to use it. And I was getting it out the other day. It's in good shape. There's nothing wrong with it. I just never really did anything with it. And so I'm hoping to get my garage set up so I can like run it out there, along with move some of the printers out there, and kind of set up a workshop kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And so I saw a technique with the diode lasers where people would take a canvas and paint it one color, then coat it, and then, let that dry. Seal that, I think, with clear coat, if I remember the video I saw right. Maybe, maybe not. Then put a layer of black on top of that. And then they dial in the laser to where it would blast the black off of it, but not the color underneath. So the color underneath had to be a fairly light color so that, there's enough difference between the two. And then they would, use the laser software to, remove the color to make remove the black to make an image. And I was thinking,
that sounds cool.
That's a fun idea. But all the videos I saw of it were only using one color under the black. And I understand that's probably a lot easier, but I was thinking, you could set the laser to lightly mark the canvas, kind of where your outline's going to be, so you could put different colors on it based on the pattern you want to burn into it. Get your color layer done. Then again, coat the whole thing in black, just, black spray paint is what I saw everybody using. and then blast your pattern off of it again. And I mean, I'm thinking I'm going to be able to come up with some really cool looking stuff doing that.
Yeah, I did a similar thing for an art project many years ago, but I used a overhead projector.
Yeah.
To project the image on so I could get the outlines that correct. But yeah, no, it's possible.
So I like the map idea though. That's a good one.
Yeah, as I said, man, just looking for something different.
So,
anyway.
Well, I guess we've killed enough time, and, you know, Madman's not going to make it.
Trying to pad for you, Madman.
We tried.
I mean, you get that urgent DoorDash delivery.
Yeah, well, you know.
I mean, his home sausage-making company's really going gangbusters now.
Oh. So, anyways, what I wanted to talk about, you know, to kind of open with, I've got this Ars Technica article. I guess I'll read out this article first, then I'll tell you where I was going with it, and we can talk about it. So, the headline is, appliance makers sad that 50% of customers won't connect smart appliances. So appliance makers like Whirlpool and LG just can't understand. They added Wi-Fi antennas to their latest dishwashers, ovens, and refrigerators, and built apps for them. Yet only 50% or fewer of their owners have connected them. What gives? The issue, according to manufacturers quoted in a Wall Street Journal report, is that customers just don't know all the things a manufacturer can do if the user connects the device that spins their clothes or keeps their food cold. Like, quote, providing manufacturers with data and insights about how customers are using their products, unquote, and allowing companies to, quote, send updates over the air, unquote. And, quote, sell relevant replacement parts or subscription services, unquote. I none of that is anything most people would give two fucks about. And yet they think companies think people are going to be excited about that shit. quote, the challenge is that a consumer doesn't see the true value that manufacturers see. I hit a button. There we go. Sorry. Consumer doesn't see the true value that manufacturers see in terms of how that data can help them in the long run. So they don't really care for spending time just to connect it, unquote. Henry Kim, U.S. Director of LG's Smart Device Division ThinQ, told the Journal. LG told the Journal that fewer than half of its smart appliances, which represent 80 to 90% of its sold appliances, stay connected to the internet. Whirlpool reports that more than half are connected. Wi-Fi connected smart appliances may be connected when they're first set up, but a new internet provider, router, hardware, or Wi-Fi password could take the device offline. And a smart oven is likely far down the list of devices to be set up once again once it happens. That means that companies like Whirlpool are missing out on services revenue, which is increasingly crucial to manufacturers facing rising input costs, declining replacement purchases, and hungry shareholders. Whirlpool acquired Recipe Management at Yumly in 2017, and its customers can sync a Yumly Pro subscription to a smart oven so that it follows the recipe's instructions, which must apparently sometimes go beyond heat to this level. I mean, I think they're right. That I mean, apparently there must be something more to it because, good God. For its part, LG saw an incremental increase in water filter sales when it tracked water volumes on connected fridges versus non-connected. That's mostly just people getting the reminder, hey, you need to change your water filter. The company told the Journal. Both companies also suggested that new features, including safety alerts, are issued to connected consumers. Whirlpool told the Journal that customers, quote, have the opportunity to opt in or opt out, unquote, of sharing data with the company. LG doesn't offer the option, but Kim told the Journal that all data is anonymized. While the manufacturers blame technical constraints, some customers may simply not want to provide companies with vague privacy policies or bad histories with security access to their networks. LG smart TVs were found in 2013 to be uploading extensive data to their servers about all the activity happening on them, including watching files on USB sticks. At the time, LG admitted it was collecting this data, but suggested the data was not personal, was only used for advertisement targeting, which means it was personal because how the hell else, what would you get from anonymized data if you're trying to target advertisement? Or as a software projects that were discontinued, LG is far from the only TV maker to participate in automated content recognition, but it's one of the few that also makes a dishwasher. More broadly, smart home or Internet of Things or IoT devices are too often built with an acquire, upload, whatever mindset. Take test models from iRobot and Roomba that uploaded images of someone's toilet to the cloud, or any of the dozens of devices detailed in an Institute of Electrical Electronics Engineer study, a Northeastern Imperial College study, or the Mozilla Foundation's Privacy Not Included list. Problems are so widespread and varied that the White House has called for universal IoT security labeling. Appliance makers are eager for buyers to connect their smart devices, but at least some think they may be done the smart thing by letting them work offline. So this article misses the biggest point, and that's apathy. Like you and I were talking about earlier, and like even the author mentioned in here, it's like, you know, so what's it doing beyond setting a temperature? I mean, okay, the makers want to collect all this data that they can use for whatever, but what does the consumer get out of connecting this device? Because 9 times out of 10, the interfaces on these things are a pain in the ass. You know, you have to connect to the hotspot it provides, download an app, get it on your Wi-Fi, set it up. Usually you have to create an account with whatever fucking company it is. And, you know, by the time you've done all that, you could have just turned the oven on and set a temperature. And,
yeah,
you know, if you have a device that genuinely provides a useful function, and I'm sure there are some, you know, we were talking earlier about getting an alert that the dishwasher's done so you know to go crack it open so your dishes can dry. But like you were saying, most of them make a chime and you usually hear it. And if you don't hear it, it's because you're not home, right?
Yeah.
And we were talking with Static, and he said he could see situations where people want to run things when they're not home. You know, or you could have it like preheating the oven so you can cook something as soon as you get home. I can see uses for this stuff, but for most people, you know, one, we have to kind of reach to think for a use of it. I mean, they're there, but why go through the hassle of setting this crap up for little to no use or benefit, you know? So it's just apathy. It's just, you know, as an example, I have a garage door opener that I could, you know, go press the Street Fighter code on the side of the thing, get it on Wi-Fi, and tie a phone app to my garage door. I haven't bothered because, you know, if I need to know if the garage door's up or down, I just go open the door or look.
Look.
I mean, you know, or if I'm outside, I go look and... So far, I don't believe I've gone off and left the door open. So, and I have the little clicky remote that it came with to open and close the door from the car if I need to. I can train the car to do that, too, without having to hook it up to Wi-Fi. So I think it's less... I don't think it's even privacy conscious. I think it's just... You look at it and go, why bother? You know, why put another app on your phone, set up another account... Go all this through all this for little to no benefit, you know? And
yeah.
I think what you're going to start seeing is devices that refuse to work unless they're connected to the internet. And, you know, when that happens, even big appliances, people are just going to return them. It's like, oh, it's broken. I need a different one. It's like, oh, it's not broken. You have to hook it up to the Wi-Fi and set up this app. And it's like, yeah, that sounds like a pain in the ass. I'm going to return this one and go get one I don't have to do that with.
Oh, and we're in the age right now of, well, yeah, we got to do it for the climate. How long before your shit shuts off because you use too much water or you use too much electricity that weekend for cooking, things like that?
Be another reason not to hook the damn thing up to the internet.
Uh-huh, right.
I mean, it's like, oh yeah, I heard Bill hooked his up to the internet, and you know, his electric bill went up, and the refrigerator shut off because he was, you know, or his AC shut off because the refrigerator said he had too much meat or some bullshit. I mean,
well, wasn't the Didn't they have the problem in Texas where people tried to turn their thermostat down and it wouldn't go any further because it was hooked?
Yeah, Al Hazard just mentioned that in the IRC about the same time you said it. So it's like for a $5 credit, you let them turn off your thermostat whenever they want. That doesn't seem like a good deal.
Like, it's just getting ridiculous. And apathy's one thing. I think some people are starting to catch on that maybe I shouldn't be giving my shit away for free. And even then, do you really want to sell your inner secrets to a corporation?
Well, I don't know what inner secrets they're getting off how often I run a dishwasher, but...
Well, for a start, it could tell you how many people are in your house on a rough average by how much water you consume. Also, the amount of electricity you consume, I can tell how many people roughly are be in that house.
That's a fair
point. I can get a pattern and a time by, say, when your fridge tap comes on because you come home after work for a drink of water, or your coffee maker turns on first thing in the morning. I know you're about to leave in about half hour, 45 minutes. Your oven's preheating, so I'm betting you're going to be home for a couple hours because you're going to be cooking a long meal. I can get a lot of fucking information out of just your electricity and your water bill.
No, that's a fair point. That's a very fair point.
I mean, put down the phone, play the game of how can I stalk someone? You know what I mean? Get rid of your electronics and see if you can get as much information on someone without using a fucking phone or a computer. You'd be surprised how much fucking, I don't know, I don't even know what to call that sort of information now.
Metadata.
Well, I don't know.
That's what the intel agencies call it.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying there's a lot you can do with a little amount of information. What seems innocuous is actually quite a lot of data for someone who is trying to, you know, find out shit about you.
Well, on top of that, like, you know, they were talking about, you know, like Al Hazard was mentioning for the $5 credit, they, you know, I've got my cell phone company every month. You know, they make it a right pain in the ass to pay your bill and not sign up for auto pay. I don't want to sign up. It's like, yeah, sure, reach into my bank account whenever you fucking feel like it. And I don't fucking think so. I don't like that.
But also, too, yeah, that company then has all your bank account details on file, which say they get ransomware, there goes your shit, and suddenly their bad day becomes your fucking bad day as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I understand from the business standpoint why they want to do that, because then it's a much stronger guarantee that they get their income on time. I get that. I just don't like it. And I like knowing when money is leaving my account, personally.
Yeah. They are gleaming so much data out of what you would think is just obnoxious and minor stuff.
Yeah.
Innocuous, yes, all right. It's lunacy, man, to keep giving this shit away. And just, it's just when my oven's on, you know. Well, they know you're home. I may be just a little too paranoid.
Well, there's some things maybe it's kind of like, privacy. Well, okay, you know, they see your lights come on, they figure you're probably home. I mean, your neighbors see you in the window walking around, they figure you're home. I mean, that's one thing. But do you want it advertised on the internet? Do you want your oven tweeting what you're fucking eating for dinner?
Yeah. You know, maybe you've never pissed anybody off in the real world who's actually, you know, could make your life hell, but some of us have.
That's a fair point.
You never know when you'll have to go dark and learn how to do this shit without, you know.
Well, I think we're going
to... Don't get into bad habits. That's what I'm trying to say.
I do think... What I'm hoping to see happen is that manufacturers quit bothering to put all this smart stuff in there just because people don't use it, right? If they're not giving you a reason to use it, why the hell would you go through the hassle of setting it up? You know, if you do have something that's useful... You know, I've got some of this smart stuff that I have hooked up because it's useful to do so. But was it the most necessary thing? No, there's other ways to do it. But I think a lot of it, too, is it's most people, especially those buying appliances, are, you know, aren't used to the idea that you have to hook the fucking oven up to the Wi-Fi, right? I wish we had Madman on here because he always has a rant about stuff that should not be connected to the internet. But they're just not used to that idea of even being a thing. And I think eventually if they start forcing it, oh, it won't run unless it's on the Wi-Fi, or more likely, it doesn't have a screen and buttons on it anymore, or little LEDs and a knob or whatever to control the device. If you want to change a setting or turn it on or off, you have to use the app. That's how they'll do it, because there's Alizar just said in the IRC, there's no need to warm up your adult toy collection from the highway. But I think
I'll
what
pay
it
that
is,
one.
Huh?
I'll pay that. I mean,
but
okay.
Yeah,
they'll
start
you've
doing
got
it
heater
cost...
issues in your house, but that's not my problem.
They'll start doing is cost savings. So instead of having an interface on there for, you know, buttons and a knob or screen or lights or whatever, it'll just be an opaque thing. And if you want to control it, you have to, you know, Wi-Fi to your phone, and that's where all the options are. I think that's how they'll do it. That's how they'll start forcing you to do it. And you'll have people paying premiums for either old restored devices, sort of like VCRs. I don't know if you've noticed that. At least in the States, if you want a VCR, nobody makes them. You can't get a new VCR anymore.
Nope, secondhand market's through the roof, too.
They're through the roof because VCRs all have a ton of mechanical components in them, mainly belts and rollers. And so there are guys on eBay that I've noticed, and I think there are probably other places too, where they go dig VCRs out of the trash or pick them up at, like, you know, Goodwills and stuff like that, you know, broken, buy them broken, fix them,
Then
around and flip them for a few hundred bucks each online because people want to play their old tapes and nobody's making a fucking VCR. So I think you're going to see something similar with the old, you know, devices that didn't require to be hooked up to the internet to work. Another good example, the car I just got, right? It's got all this stuff in it, and it's got a fucking settings menu that, you know, it almost rivals an iPad settings menu, right? And it's just like, I mean, it took me a bit, but okay, it had a warning on it every time I turned off the car to check the rear seat for passengers.
Oh, because you don't want to kill a kid.
I guess that's what that is.
Yeah, that's what that is.
And it's like,
There was legislation passed for car manufacturers. Too many people, crackheads, were leaving the kids in the car.
It's like, I'm not forgetting that a child exists in my car. I'm fairly certain I don't have any right now.
Well, when you've had like 15, 16 drinks, you pick up Billy from daycare. Sometimes you just want to get in the house, pour yourself another. You fucking forget.
Okay, I mean, I get that.
Well, dude, they legalized weed in the state. Yes. Okay, people are forgetting their kids in the car because they're fucking high.
But there's a setting to turn that off. It's buried three menus down, and when you turn it off, it says, "Okay, we'll ask you again, in 6 months if you want this back on or not." And it's just like, fuck.
It's obnoxious.
Yeah. Well, it's like the Windows updates, right? You know, where it's like, oh, Windows 11 is ready for your computer, and the options are, you know, install it now or remind me later. There is no go the fuck away, I like my computer the way it is.
Yeah, I know. I've got, please finish up setup.
Oh, God,
fuck
I hate
off.
That. I did
the
figure
reason
out
I'm
how
not
to
signed into any of this shit.
I did figure out how to do a local account on Windows 11 for a work computer. And I ended up having to put it on a Microsoft account anyways. Wasn't that literally Windows 10? No, Windows 10 didn't even ask. There are video out there of people in the middle of, like, Counter-Strike competitions playing on the, you know, where the computer just in the middle of the competition stops and starts installing Windows 10.
I remember that.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, you know, they were invading people's homes and drugging their parents so that all they could say was Windows 10 until you installed it.
Did I tell you I found a hack to roll the odometer back on your old car? I know it's a little too little too late. I learned a lot.
I believe it would be a power drill, wouldn't it?
No, dude. That's Dude, I'm a dinosaur. The fact that I would think about doing it like that. Apparently, there are actually 3 odometers in any car built after, I think it's 06. There's an odometer in the gearbox. There's an odometer in the drive shaft, and there's an odometer on the dashboard. And all must match each other, or the car won't start. So you have to change them all to exactly the same, or the car won't start. The computer locks you out.
Yeah, I believe that.
They don't want you rolling the
damn odometer back to get a better deal on your used trade-in.
Yeah, I'd, if anybody interested out there is looking for their little niche part of the world for hacking, get into hacking vehicles. That's going to be a big thing in the future.
Oh yeah, I want at some point I want to see if I can monitor the CAN bus in that car, because it's got to be nuts, you know, with everything that's going on in it. But I think you're going to start seeing a premium for devices that work without a fucking computer.
Yeah. Definitely, especially as the Internet of Things gets rolled out and people find they can't get away from it because your clothes are chipped.
Yeah. I like this one. Al Hazard in the IRC just said, the way to roll back the odometer is just drive it till you hit 999-9999 and then keep going.
Yeah. That's about the only way, unless you've got a little bit of sophisticated software there to fuck around with. But I met up with a dude who's giving me the basics 101 of modern electronics in cars.
Oh, it's got to be a mess.
Yeah, he's not going to teach me how to do it, but he's going to show me a few little tips and tricks. Only because he's making so much fucking money with what he knows how to do. He doesn't want to give me the information in case I come in on the market with him. He's specialized.
I gotcha. Yeah, Al Hazard just said the bus is connected to everything. It's a nightmare, so I guess he's done that. I was reading in a lot of newer cars, there's multiple CAN buses now because there was too much traffic going across it for just the one. So
yeah, I wouldn't even know where to start.
Well, I started reading up on it, and it turns out the protocol's not that bad as far as CAN bus goes. But you know, you have so many different devices talking on it at the same time that sorting out what's what can be a nightmare, especially because everything's mostly just passing code, signals. So it's going to have like a bit that is going to look like a hex or something like that, but it's actually probably like a bitwise position means things, like each position in the bit means like whether a sensor is tripped or not and shit like that. So trying to decode what all that is, you know, if you don't have the right, sources, it's probably going to be an absolute nightmare. But
I didn't even know the language they use for an onboard computer. I got a long way to go before I even start.
Well, I mean, what do you mean the language?
Well, what's it programmed in? I have no idea.
Probably most of them are probably in C, but I mean, that's because most cars don't have like a computer like what's on your desk. Some do. Teslas do. And any with the entertainment centers in usually have something that's kind of equivalent to like a phone or a tablet. But most of the devices in a car are you running microcontrollers. So it's going to be ARM or Atmel or AT Mega chips. And they're mostly just throwing serial data on a CAN bus. So it's not like there's a computer. There's hundreds of little embedded computers. You will have the computer of the car, and that's the thing like doing the engine timings and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, your car's probably got like 5 or 6 big computers and then tons of microprocessors in it. So It's car hacking is interesting. They're saying Al Hazard says the ECU is effectively a computer from what he knows. Yeah, the electronic
controller. I put an aftermarket computer in which had an interface which I could access through a laptop to help me tune the car.
Yeah.
But I haven't played with it. But that was early 2000s technology, man, and I haven't really fucked around with anything since.
I misunderstood what he said, because he said ECU is effectively C, and I thought he meant that that's a computer. But yeah, he's saying it's all C. So
okay,
well, it's C or C derived. So because it's all low level shit. That's the other thing that makes it hard. I mean, you're not using fucking Visual Basic or Python. It's all low level stuff. So it's going to be things being passed in hex. It's going to be, you know, serial connections on the CAN bus, bitwise.
Yeah, I think
math, all that fun crap you used to have to do on 8 and 16 bit computers to get them to do anything.
Yeah, that's. I'll hang out with this guy for a bit because, dude, he had a car worth of fucking laptops and different shit for different cars. So, I'll see how it goes.
Converted to C from another language? Oh. So yeah, he's saying that some people are, you know, using another language to write it, and then that's converted from that language to C, and then the C is compiled for the. I'm getting Microsoft front page vibes on that one. Oh man. Battery, and that's getting low. I'm gonna plug that in. But
make a little beep.
No, screen came on, and I just happened to see it. It's a radio.
Maybe you should hook it up to your phone to let it know when the battery's running low.
So okay. We want to play that game. We can go there. So we were just talking about shit being hooked up to the phone. I wanted a radio for my car, and I wanted to do a fairly invisible install, right? And I found a radio that mostly uses Bluetooth. Has a Bluetooth handset speaker that looks like a handy talkie. Looks like one of those little, you know, radios you'd buy at Walmart. And then to program it, you Bluetooth it to your phone. And,
okay,
you know, it's overkill, and it's all Chinesium, so the app is trying to hook into some Chinese service that, you know, fuck that shit. But it proved useful. We were talking about it earlier. I'm not going to go into details on that, but it did prove useful because it was automatically doing some things that I wasn't aware that it would do. Alhazar, have you not heard us refer to Chinesium? Premium weapons grade Chinesium, probably going to fall apart the moment you touch it or sneeze at it. I mean, the absolute best look, Chinesium are the tools where they didn't harden the steel. You know, where the guy takes the wrench and the wrench bends.
Just have a look at Chinese building fails on YouTube, and that's you'll understand Chinesium.
So, but yeah. Anyways. So the nice thing about this particular one is I can stash the body of the radio, you know, away somewhere in the car out of sight and hide the wires nicely and all that. Instead of having a radio head unit bolted onto the dash somewhere, I've just got the little handy talkie that I can stash when I'm not using. And, you know, program it from my phone so that you never even have to really deal with digging out the radio or having an old CB mic in your hand, you know, that kind of stuff. So you actually hook like Bluetooth headsets and shit up to it too, but I haven't got that far, nor do I have an old headset laying around actually, now that I think about it. But yeah, it's interesting. So there's good and bad. Like I can definitely see scenarios where these apps and hooking everything to internet and all that can be useful, but at the same time, man, I mean, I don't like all these companies, you know, their point of view is, well, we need the data from them. You should hook up to Wi-Fi anyways. And all it does is give you the ability to do the same thing you do by pushing a button on the front of it, you know? And I really hope it doesn't get to the point where they're just not putting the buttons on the front of it to force you to do the apps.
Speaking of phones and apps and getting pinged, I think they solved a murder because of a phone ping this week. I'll have to get back to you on that, though. The dude actually took his phone with him when he stashed the body.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. If he'd listened to this show, he wouldn't have fucked up.
If he'd listened to this show. Well, yeah, I guess for the record, if you are going to commit crimes, wait, what's the right thing to say here? Please carry your phone and video it, post it to YouTube along with your home address so that the police have an easier time. Is that how you say this?
And that way I can laugh at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting. Because I was just milling around in my head. Okay, so you got all this data from your fridge and the oven. So that's, you hook that in with phone app data and then hook that in with your smart TV habits, and then I crack your GPS on your car. I've got your whole month. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So if you are doing anything nefarious, you'd have to be totally wary of all that. Your movements is when they're going to nab you. Less likely to come to your house and grab you, get you out when you've got all your shit with you.
Well, you don't have as many rights when you're not in your house either, so.
That too.
So.
Oh, didn't they do this? That sucks.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll get you to read the story first. Ready.
Yeah, I'm good. Read the article, then I'll comment.
All right, so this next one's from NPR. A robot was scheduled to argue in court. Then came the threats. A British man who planned to have a robot lawyer help a defendant fight a traffic ticket has dropped the effort after receiving threats of possible prosecution and jail time. Joshua Browder, CEO of the New York-based startup Do Not Pay, created a way for people contesting traffic tickets to use arguments in court generated by artificial intelligence. Here's how it was supposed to work. The person challenging a speeding ticket would wear smart glasses that record both the court proceedings and dictate responses into the defendant's ear from a small speaker. This system relied on a few leading AI text generators, including ChatGPT and DaVinci. Whoever named DaVinci obviously never saw the first Hackers movie. Never name anything that's going to be controlling anything DaVinci. Anyways, yes, that did just pop in my eye. And DaVinci is just the ChatGPT model. No, Alhazard, it was a joke.
Go watch Hackers.
The virus in Hackers is called DaVinci, and it's got an animated dude's face over the art, because you know that's the way you wrote viruses in the 90s, is by, you know, making a demo scene animation that would use all the memory in the computer for the animation first, and then the actual attack code second.
God, movie's so bad.
The fact that you that might be a sin right there. he said, oh, yeah, I remember the Da Vinci virus. Eugenes. I mean the plague. It's like, no. You name the handle first. You don't put the real name first. What's wrong with you? Wow.
That movie is so bad.
Of course it's bad. It's one of the reasons it's great. Because obviously you use that little laser headset game to hack computers, but or whatever it was he put on his head at the end.
I love the end bit with all the tough books.
All the tough books classic. And the phone booths, yeah. Yes.
That was fucking hilarious. We just duct tape these phones together and it's like they'll never know where we are.
Camo painted tough books. Actually, there's a guy on YouTube who really is into that movie. Like, really is into that movie. And, like, he's recreating the props. So he's figuring out the computers they bought that they cut up and stuck MacBooks inside of. I don't think they were even MacBooks at the time. They were early Apple computers. But because they knew that those computers could do all the animations and all the software that they had made to make the graphics were all done in Mac. So they were buying, like, Compaqs and Dells and gutting these computers and putting the Macs in them, the Apple computers in them, to do all the graphics. And so this guy is like trying to recreate all the props from the movie and document how to do it. And I mean, the one where he recreates Nikon's laptop is awesome, except he sticks a Raspberry in it. It's like, oh, come on. I mean, I understand why you did that, but I mean, there are other ways you could have done that. Don't get me wrong. I mean, sticking a Raspberry inside of something to make a Cyberdeck out of it is not the worst way to go, but it's a little pedestrian. I think there are better ways you could have done that if you were making a hacker's laptop. You know what I mean? So, anyways, where was I? We're reading an article. The first ever AI-powered legal defense was set to take place in California on February 22nd, but not anymore. As word got out, an uneasy buzz began to swirl around various state bar officials, according to Browder. He said angry letters began to pour in. Multiple state bar associations have threatened us, unquote, Browder said. Quote, one even said a referral to his district attorney's office and prosecution and prison time would be possible, unquote. In particular, Browder said that one state bar official noted that the unauthorized practice of law is a misdemeanor in some states, punishable by up to 6 months in county jail. That bothers me. I've got concerns with that. The unauthorized practice of law. You don't have the credentials to actually make a case. No. You got to get it. You got to be credentialed by the government to make a case. I don't like that. I mean, yes, the man who defends himself in court has a fool for a client. I get that, but anyone should be able to participate in the legal system. Because that's effectively what you'd be doing with one of these AI assistants. You'd be representing yourself and having a computer program help you figure out the right magic words to say in court.
I mean, isn't TPG, it's passed its medical license, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think they had it passed. I think somebody put the bar association questions on it, and it passed that, too.
Okay, then it has. It's fine to, as long as it pays its dues. I think that's all they're butthurt about, is that their jobs may be obsolete very fucking soon.
Well, I think that's considering how, you know, specialized the practice of law is, I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, dude, imagine how much money you could save if you had, say, TPG working on your international law of shipping fucking rules that your company goes through each month. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Al Hazard is saying, you know, boilerplate legal documents produced by ChatGPT. There are already websites that do the what's the big one, LegalZoom or something like that. You get the documents
like
generated. They're basically as good as what lawyers will do. You know, literally as good as anything you pay four to five figures for. I believe it. I absolutely believe it. A lot of this stuff is just forms that they've hidden behind pomp and circumstance. So, and you know, fancy Latin words. Quote, even if it wouldn't happen, the threat of criminal charges was enough to give it up, unquote, he said. Quote, the letters have become so frequent that we thought it was just a distraction and that we should move on, unquote. State Bar Association's licensed and regulated attorneys is a way to ensure people hire lawyers who understand the law. Browder refused to cite which state bar associations in particular sent letters and what officials made the threat of possible prosecution, saying his startup, Do Not Pay, is under investigation by multiple state bar associations, including California's. So they've already opened investigations on this guy just for saying, hey, here's an idea. In a statement, for over trying it against a traffic ticket. I mean, wow. In a statement, State Bar of California Chief Trial Counsel George Cardona declined to comment on the probe into Do Not Pay, but said the organization has a duty to investigate possible instances of unauthorized practice of law. Quote, we regularly let potential visitors or violators know that they could face prosecutions in civil or criminal court, which is entirely up to law enforcement, unquote, Cardona said in a statement. Leah Wilson, the State Bar of California's executive director, told NPR that there has been a recent surge in poor quality legal representation that has emerged to fill a void in affordable legal practice. Well, yeah, no, most people can't afford lawyers. That's the other big problem with that, is that you've locked out the legal system to people who can afford lawyers. Maybe that's more important than, you know, the whole, you know, bar association protection is, wait, what, regular people could participate in the law? No. We can't have that. No. Quote, in 2023, we are seeing well-funded, unregulated providers rushing into the market for low-cost legal representation, raising questions again about whether and how these services should be regulated, unquote, Wilson said.
Didn't the consumer have a choice between whether they want to use a computer or a human?
Apparently not.
I thought we were under a free... Oh, yeah. Aren't under a free market economy anymore. I forgot. We have public-private partnerships now.
Let's see. Even if the use of AI in court was not being challenged, some observers have questioned just how effective Do Not Pay's AI tools would be for people in need of legal services, with some having mixed to shoddy results attempting to use its basic features. Browder has been known for drumming up attention with stunts. Earlier this month, he claimed on Twitter that the company would pay any lawyer $1 million to argue in court in front of the U.S. Supreme Court, wearing AirPods that would pipe AI-generated arguments from its robot lawyer. Founded in 2015, Do Not Pay has raised $28 million, including funding from prominent venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz, according to analytics firm PitchBook. So instead of trying to help those accused of traffic violations use AI in the courtroom, Browder said Do Not Pay will train its focus on assisting people dealing with extensive medical bills, unwanted subscriptions, and issues with credit reporting agencies. Browder also still hopes most of those, the moment you mention a lawsuit, will drop whatever it is that's being dumb. I mean, they know. Well, okay, maybe not the medical bills, but the subscriptions of the credit reporting agencies. The moment you say, okay, I'm going to go talk to a lawyer, they usually end up dropping whatever the hell it is, because it's just not worth their time. Whether anybody's in the right or not, 9 times out of 10, unless you're calling them every other week to get stuff dropped. I mean, if it's like a one and done thing, usually they'll just drop it. I think most of the credit reporting agencies will just take the, you know, if you call and complain something's wrong, I think the first thing you complain about, they don't even check. They just do it. Not because they couldn't, just because it's not worth the time for the number of complaints they get. Now, if you come in and call with, you know, 20, 30 things every other month, then it might be different, but like, if you're a one-time person calling in to complain about something, I think they just do it. It's just not even worth the fight. Quote, the truth is most people can't afford lawyers, unquote. He said, quote, this could have shifted the balance and allowed people to use tools like ChatGPT in the courtroom that maybe could have helped them win cases, unquote. Well, there's some weasel words. The future of robot lawyers faces uncertainty for another reason that is far simpler than the Bar Association's existential questions. Courtroom rules. Recording audio during a live legal proceeding is not permitted in federal court and is often prohibited in state courts. The AI tools developed by Do Not Pay, which remain completely untested in an actual courtroom, requires recording audio of arguments in order for the machine learning algorithms to generate responses. Quote, I think calling the tool a robot lawyer really riled a lot of lawyers up, unquote, Browder said. Quote, but I think they're missing the forest for the trees. Technology is advancing and the courtroom rules are very outdated, unquote. Well, I think he's right that a lot of legal and courtroom rules are very outdated.
A lot of laws are outdated, man.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, the government's built on that. And you're never going to see it fixed. You are never going to see it fixed. Because the moment, you know, you come in, you have somebody come in and say, hey, we could digitize this entire process and take something that's taking an entire room of people, you know, years to do. We could do it in 15 minutes.
You're going to cost legacy jobs, man.
Oh, well, not only that, but you're going to have, you know, Sally, the state clerk, who's been in that position for 30 years, just go, no, I don't want to change how I do things. I don't care if it's better or not. I'm not changing how I do things.
Yeah, and so legacy job positions have to go from government, man.
Yeah. And by the time Sally's, you know, retired and out of the job, and somebody else comes in and takes it, there'll be three other people who's like, nope, we've always done it this way. This is how we know how to do it, and we're not changing.
Oh, the Japanese Minister for Technology
doesn't know how to use the internet.
Doesn't know how to use computer. And they've just upgraded from, what, floppy disks to CDs or something? They were doing...
Well, they had to get rid of the old Commodore 64s because nobody could get an 1851 drive working again. So.
You make the fucking joke, Morps, but you go look at this shit. It's old as crap because it works. And they're like, well, if it works, don't fix it. You know?
Well, okay, so Alhazar just mentioned the airlines. So most airplanes are flying Solaris boxes, if you're curious. They went Solaris because they used to be Windows NT, and that caused problems. But
I don't want a Windows-driven plane.
Airplane, yeah.
Yeah, no.
The actual thing is, a lot of these companies, especially large manufacturing banks, a lot of them spent millions of dollars in the 80s on mainframe systems. So they tried to stay on these mainframes for as long as they could to get their investment out of them, which makes sense from a business standpoint. And then, you know, in the last decade, in the teens, I guess you would say, the 2010s, they spent a lot of money again, not replacing the mainframes, but getting... basically middleware in place that could talk between a web server and the mainframe, so that, you know, a lot of them are even then some point it makes no sense to replace them. You're right, it might make sense not to replace them because the cost of replacing them is so fucking high. It's individual businesses. It's like, you got to look. But one of the things they're starting to run into is guys who know the Pascal and the Fortran and the other programming languages that these mainframes were written in. That talent pool is getting very tight because a lot of people have retired, nobody's teaching COBOL in colleges these days. So the cost of getting the data out of these very proprietary systems, and it's going to be systems that nobody has any experience with on the back end, because probably nobody's been maintaining the back end for years, right? So, like, there's not going to be anybody who understands how American Airlines, just to pick a company, how the back end of their mainframe system works, because it's probably completely different from anybody else's, because back in the 80s when it was programmed, you know, it was programmed from scratch for them.
The airline industry is upgrading some of their safety equipment right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having all sorts of problems.
Yeah, they knocked out their computer system.
Migrating shit over.
Flights a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, which tells me that, you know, you do have problems when you're migrating large systems like that.
Oh, absolutely.
The fact that it was down for an entire day makes me wonder if they were screaming for some specialty that they didn't have. Know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. It's like, oh, well, we had to get Jerry out of retirement, and he wanted a $100,000 retainer, and, you know.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I mean, because they lost billions in a day. You know what I mean? Makes me think they did not have the specialty technician.
Or they just didn't have anybody who understood
the
gremlins in that system.
They probably bid it out to fucking some Indian tech company, too.
Okay. You know what? You mentioned Indian tech company. And we're going to scratch this last story because I just looked at the clock. I finally figured out what it is because I have to work with a ton of Indian contractors in my day job, right? And, I finally figured out what it is that gets under my skin working with them so damn much. And I finally put my finger on it. And it's not racism for people who are getting ready to make that joke. I finally figured out how to start tuning into the accents. I've gotten better at that. But I figured out what it is. Most of the guys who I work with stateside, and when it comes to, you know, figuring out computers and IT and stuff like that, it's not just a job. You know what I mean? It's something
lifestyle.
They care about, something they'd want to do. You know, I'm sitting here surrounded by screens right now yelling at the internet because at some point 11, 12, however long we've been doing this, years ago, I decided I wanted to yell at the internet about security stuff. And it's hard to argue that hasn't actually been helpful for my career. But, not directly, but indirectly.
Once just, a week.
Huh?
It does de-stress you once a week, though.
Well, not only that, but it also forces me to dig through a bunch of news sources once a week and stay abreast of what's going on. So,
exactly.
Indirectly, there's actually been a ton of benefit for me doing that. But, you know, it's not... Even if my job was, you know, car mechanic or, you know, chartered accountant or something else, I'd probably still be playing with computers and radios and soldering irons and shit in my off time anyways, right? These Indian guys, most of them anyways, now I'm generalizing, and I'm very much aware of that, and I think it's because, you know, I've read some articles on how their entire education system is funneling people into IT because they see it as a cash cow. They don't see it as how to get technology to work. They see it as a job. Fill out the ticket, solve the problem. Fill out a ticket, solve the problem. They don't see it.
There's no passion.
Yeah, there's no passion. There's no, how do we make this work? What's the right way to do it? What's the best way to do it? It's just, this is my 9-to-5. I might as well be running a cash register or, you know, spinning a wrench on an assembly line. I think that's why I get frustrated so much working with them. And it's not, there might be some cultural issues there, because I do know I've had several conversations with Indian project managers who, I don't know, it's like you'll explain a problem to them and then they'll spit what you just said right back and say, well, what are you, you know, okay, well, what do we do to fix this? And it's like, or my favorite is where you'll explain that this is not, you know, you're asking me about something that's not in my area. You know, you need to figure out who owns this. Well, who owns it? Well, not us. I don't know who owns that. You need to figure that out. Well, you need to tell me who owns it. And it's like, well, I don't know who owns it. That's not even in my department. That's not my area. I don't know who you need to work with. Well, it's assigned to you, so you need to figure out who owns it. Well, it's only assigned to me because you put my name on it when I missed a meeting. It's like, well, it's assigned to you, so you need to figure out, you know, that's the game they play. You know, they just, you know, they've got your name on it, and they're going to ask you about it every fucking week on a conference call. And it's like, it's not even my department. It's not even my area. You're asking me, I do security. Why are you asking me about the accounting department? I don't do that. I mean, and you know, I've had, you know, seeing two of them go at it with a PM fight is hilarious. I might have, you know, when they were doing that to me, I might have put a different contractor PM in as the person they needed to talk to. So they started going at it each other. Well, you need to tell me who it is. Well, I don't know. You need to tell me who it is. Who do I speak with? I don't know. Who has the instructions on this? And that was fucking funny because I basically made a recursive loop out of Indian contractors.
A vendor loop.
At least I think they're Indian. Most of them sound like they're in, you know, they don't really talk about where they are, but they, you know what I mean. Vindaloop.
Yeah. I didn't make the joke, dude. South Park did it.
Oh, that's fucking
great.
If
you haven't seen the episode of South Park with the IT guy, you're missing out.
Oh, I need to go watch that episode then.
Watch it after the show.
Okay. Right. let's close do decking and close it out before I get accused of another racism. So this pure decking, this dojo link is really fascinating to me. It is a collection of various remote control codes. Yes, Hazard. I did just say before I get accused of another racism and then played the digital dojo thing, which at least we took out the shit from Full Metal Jacket that used to be in it.
Back in the more spicy days.
It's like, is that a racism against Japanese? No, we're referencing kung fu movies. Come on. But so it's an entire collection of various serial and byte codes for different infrared remote controls out of the LIRC library. So if you have like a Flipper Zero or something else with a programmable infrared on it, or even just a PC, yeah, with the, these are the codes you can use for various systems, and they've got a ton of them.
Yeah, put that one on a side that's in the saved folder.
So, yeah, if you're wanting to just kind of explore, because when you click into one of them, usually what you'll see is a config file that lists out a button number, a name for it, and then like a hexadecimal or a binary code that's probably, you know, that's going to be what the infrared is transmitting, the actual code it's transmitting. And so one of the things you can do here, even if you're not interested in like using the infrared codes, is like you can just go look, okay, well, let's say Kenwood, here's something. Kenwood RCA0400. And you can see all the buttons that remote had on it. TA left, right, rewind, forward, fast forward, stop, left, right, rewind. So, it's got different codes that do the same thing. CD skip, so you can go through and see, these are all look like they're in hexadecimal. Key aux, tuner, CD. So you can see all the buttons that were on a remote and see the codes that, you know, were useful for them. So even if you're just researching a device, you can see what all the buttons for a remote were. So I don't, you know, that's arguable utility, but they've actually got pictures of some of the remotes too. So, you know, there's a lot in here to dig through if you're curious. You know, even Microsoft has got a folder in here. What do they got from Microsoft? The Xbox 360. Oh, let's click on the Xbox 360. What does that got? That's got all the hex codes for the Xbox 360 remote. So, yeah, if you want to, you know, use those or just see what the buttons were available. The other thing you could do with this is if you were playing with an infrared transmitter, again, like a Flipper Zero or an Arduino or something hooked up and using this LIRC library, okay, here's what all the official codes are. Start sending other codes and see if you can figure out things that weren't on the remote, like technicians' menus or hotel menus and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, interesting little thing to research, but that's all I've got for us tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit. In the IRC tonight, we had Alice Zard, Cyber Lard, Psychros, myself, and Sardonyx. Are you? Closing thoughts?
I don't really have anything for this week. I'm thoughtless. There we go. Absolutely thoughtless.
Don't tell your wife that. actually, she might appreciate it. That could go either way.
It could go either way, man.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, that's a sound effect time.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Oh, fuck.
Shut up, Wesley.